For over 30 years, BHM has been the trusted CPA firm for closely held businesses across Ohio and West Virginia.
BHM has made life easier for myself and our company when it comes to tax and accounting.
At BHM, we develop top talent to tackle your most complex challenges.
A CPA firm can be the lifeblood to a successful business. If you don't feel that way about your firm, ask yourself why not.
Visit bhmcpagroup.com to schedule a consultation. BHM, the CPA firm simplifying the complex.
At Care Heating and Cooling, we put you first. You are the reason we're open 7 days a week and why it's easy to schedule service at careheatingandcooling.com. Your safety is why we check every gas furnace for carbon monoxide. And it's because of you that our techs are paid to fix your furnace, not sell you a new one. So it's no surprise that last year Care was awarded a BBB Torch Award for ethics, because at Care, we're committed to doing business right. Call Care at 1-800-COOLING when you need a company you can trust.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
From a meeting at the office to a big first day, there's a lot of pressure to wear the right clothes for every event. But clothes don't make the man. So why stuff your closet with things that only work for some situations? With Mack Weldon, you can build a wardrobe that looks polished in any setting. Their clothing is understated and tells the world that you stay you wherever you go. They craft each piece by combining timeless style and modern performance materials, so you can stay looking good and feeling comfortable from morning to evening. No wardrobe changes required. Browse everything from summer-ready tech linen shorts and anti-odor polos to tailored sweats and crews for a night in. They can outfit you for anything, no matter what's on your agenda for the day. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 25% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25. That's MACKWELDON.com, promo code MACK25.
You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Do you know what triggered movement at 6:04:01 a.m. of Mr. O'Keefe's cell phone?
I presume that the device was moving at that time, but I don't know the details of who.
Objection, Your Honor, move to strike it.
I'll strike it.
Please continue.
Okay. Regarding the flight climb events, looking at the cache encrypted C database, I was able to find more granular, accurate timestamps for these records. And I showed those timestamps on this map at the position that the device was, according to the location data at the time.
So you're going back to earlier in the evening now, 12:22:14.
Correct.
To 12:24:37 when the phone stopped near the flagpole.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
So we have the first record at 22:17, a flight climb event was recorded. I've highlighted that was a red line, and that equates to the red line that shows underneath the timestamp where the location was, where the device was at that time. The second record is 22 minutes and 32 seconds, showed with a green line, which shows over here. And then finally, 24 minutes and 37 seconds after midnight, shows with an orange line down here outside 34 Fairview. I'd like to point out that health activity events are recorded upon the event completion. The device doesn't know that you're about to walk up some stairs. It doesn't know that you're halfway up some stairs. It has to wait until you've reached the top in order to detect that an altitude change has occurred. So that change only gets written to the database once the flight climb has ended. I tested approximately 8 different phones, different models, different versions of iOS. And found that on average, there was a time difference between 15 and 50 seconds between when I physically stopped walking up a flight of stairs and when the record was made. So it's just based on the time that the device takes to pull the altitude, detect that an altitude difference has occurred, and then write the data to the database. So then I took that average data of between 15 and 50 seconds and plotted it onto this graph, which also plots the altitude of the device over time. So the red line here shows the time according to the cache encrypted C database where the first flight climb event was recorded at 22 minutes and 17 seconds. Working back 15 seconds from that to say that with the gap that I know exists between the flight climb ending and when the record's recorded, the flight climb event is presumed to have occurred within this red gradient area. The altitude information on the device shows that between those times, the altitude increased from around 41 meters to around 45 meters. You may recall earlier I said that it's a 3 meter incline that Apple considers a flight climb event. Therefore, the incline that occurred within this red gradient is sufficient to trip a flight climb event. When we look at the second record at 22 minutes and 32 seconds, this is shown on this chart as a green line, and again, working back 15 seconds and beyond to allow for the tolerance, we see the green gradient area. This shows an altitude change of around 45 meters to 48 meters. Again, that would be sufficient for a flight climb event to be recorded because we have 3 meter incline change. We then don't see an incline change for a while. All we see is the device going downhill until we get the record right at the end there at 24 minutes and 37 seconds. And again, working back around 15 seconds to the orange gradient, we see an increase from around 25 to 28, 29 meters. Again, that would be sufficient to cause a flight climb event to be recorded.
I'd like to ask you.
Sorry. I'll go
continue
back.
And then I'll ask you, please.
Okay. I then compared that information to a topology website from the area, according to a topology website data, and plotted that out here. We see the red circle now is related to the first flight climb, the green circle to the second flight climb, and the orange circle to the third flight climb. The gradients that we see here are the same gradients that were shown on the previous graph. So the presumption is that within this red gradient is where the flight climb event occurred. Within the green gradient here is where the second flight climb event occurred. And within the orange gradient here is where the third flight climb event occurred. The white circles show the altitude of that particular location according to the topology website. So again, we see that for the red gradient, there's an increase from 43 to 47 meters. Between the green gradient and the green number two, again, we're going from around 47 to 50 meters. And then with the orange gradient at the bottom, we've gone from around 26 to 28 meters. So fairly consistent with the data that was recorded on the device in terms of altitude information. And I would suggest is the reason that these flight climb events occurred.
Mr. Whiffen, there's three different times. The first is 12:22:17. At that time, was the Waze data app initiated?
It was.
And did that indicate whether or not Mr. O'Keefe or his phone were traveling in a car at that time?
It appeared to be still be traveling in a car.
At 12:22:32, was the Waze data initiated and active?
It was, yes.
And at that time, does the data indicate that Mr. O'Keefe's phone was in a vehicle and moving?
It does.
And you showed us a slide finally from 12:24:37 that the vehicle was still moving 1.4 miles per hour?
Correct.
And was the Waze data initiated and active at that time, 12:24:37?
If I remember correctly, Waze had closed about 5 or 10 seconds earlier.
Now, based on your study of the Waze information, the location information, the topography, and the healthcare data, do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty whether the indication on the healthcare data reflecting flights of stairs, do you have an opinion whether or not that was registered as a result of a person holding a phone walking upstairs or for some other reason?
Based on the location data, the health data, and the research that I did and the testing, I believe it is more likely that the device was in a vehicle traveling on a road going up an incline versus the location data being incorrect and the person being walking up physical stairs.
Thank you. You can continue, please.
Okay. So I'll address the idea of three clocks, which I believe was brought up previously. Well,
let me interrupt.
Sorry.
Why don't we just explain to the jury how clocks work in an iPhone?
That is kind of covered in the next slide anyway.
Okay.
It may be worth just jumping ahead to that slide.
Explain the idea of three clocks.
Yes. Essentially, there is one clock on an iPhone. It's the clock that you see. It's shown in the top corner, and all activity is related to that particular time. So when you receive a text message, the time that's shown in the database is related to the time that you can see on the phone. When you do health activity, it's related to the time that you see in the top corner of the phone. You know, everything is related to that time. The difference is within the current PowerLog databases. It's a subset of files stored on iOS devices. They use what's called a monotonic clock, but it's not a clock that can actually be trusted to see when events occurred. It's the way that the device records time. It's essentially a counter that's just counting seconds since the device was reset, basically. And I'm sure most people can recall a time where you would set a clock on a digital device, come back to it 3 or 4 months later, and the clock's now not quite as accurate as it was when you left it. Time starts to drift. It might drift forward and be faster. It might drift slower and be further behind. That essentially happens with the monotonic clock as well. So you have to take the values that the monotonic clock provides and add or subtract different values, which are essentially offsets, in order to get the accurate time. And that's what I'll be displaying in this slide here. The confusion with the idea of three clocks, I believe, comes from the way that Magnet Axiom product displays power log data. They show a monotonic date and time, a baseband date and time, and a display date and time within the power log records. As an examiner, it's really good to see this data and understand how the tool is determining these values. As an examiner, it would be really bad to look at these values and think that they are accurate timestamps at face value, because they aren't. And I'll start to talk through how this information works. So the other thing that Axiom shows, as well as the monotonic baseband and display times, is they show the location where this information came from. In this case, we have two tables. One is called PL Springboard Agent Event Forward S Block. And that is what this table is here. And you can see we've got an ID number, a timestamp, and a value of locked. But we also show a second table that's involved called PL Storage Operator Event Forward Time Offset. And that's this table at the bottom here. So again, we see there's an ID, a timestamp, baseband, kernel, and system values. These values all need to be read together in order to make sense of the data. So for example, if I take the timestamp that's shown here, the 1643 33687 number, if you treat that as number of seconds since the 1st of January 1970, it's what we call a Unix epoch. That will get you the timestamp of 29th of January 2022 at midnight, 21 minutes and 27 seconds, once you account for the UTC minus 5 offset. And you'll see that that is the same timestamp that Axiom shows here as the monotonic time, 12:21:27. What we need to then do is take that monotonic time and add it to the baseband value that we see in the time offset table. So now we have a value of 1643.3687.149.54, and we add minus 183.149.54 whatever this number is here, to get this value. If we treat this value as number of seconds since the 1st of January 1970, then we get a time of 18 minutes and 23 seconds past midnight on January 29th, which is also the time that we show here as the baseband time. Finally, we can take the monotonic time and add the minus 181 seconds shown in the system to get this value, which equates to 18 minutes and 25 seconds past midnight on the 29th of January, which is the same as the display time up here. So all this is essentially doing is saying that the counter that is built into the iPhone is registered the time of that we see in the top, the monotonic time. This is not necessarily the time that the event happened. You have to offset it with this value here in order to get the actual time that this happened. My own personal phone, when I was doing this testing, the time difference between the monotonic time and when something actually happened was over 2 weeks. There was a massive difference because my phone has been drifting so far since I originally bought and set up that phone. And again, when I was testing this, I can turn the flashlight on, turn the flashlight off. Both of those activities are recorded in the power log database. If I just look at the monotonic time, it's off by over 2 weeks. If I do this process to calculate the correct offset, it shows exactly when I turned that flashlight on and when I turned that flashlight off. The calculation is imperative. Without the calculation, these timestamps are irrelevant. And all Axiom is doing here is they're showing you the values that they use in order to calculate the final value. It doesn't mean that you can take the monotonic timestamp and read anything into it. It's completely irrelevant on its own.
Is it necessary to understand this process in order to ensure the integrity of the time that you're offering to the jury so you understand whether it's accurate or not?
It would be if we were discussing power log data. Power log data only really encompasses things like battery level, the time and date that it's plugged in, button presses, camera usage, things like that. It doesn't count for location data. It doesn't count for Apple Health data. They both work on the system time. And they both work on the same system time. So they're always going to be aligned.
Do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty as to the accuracy of the location data times and the accuracy of the health data times that you shared with us?
They'd be consistent with each other. So to summarize that, there's only really one clock that's in use on an iPhone for recording. The only difference is the monotonic time, which is how power logs record information, but you need to offset the times to figure out when that activity actually happened. And that you only have to offset those times for power log data, not for health, not for location, not for messages or photographs or any other activity like that, purely power log data.
Is there another subject that you looked at, that you analyzed, in order to reach a conclusion about the time and location of John O'Keefe's cell phone over the night of January 29, 2022?
Yes, the next one is battery temperature.
Can you explain a little bit of background on this before you start?
Yes.
Slides?
So again, we have a temperature sensor built in within the phone, monitoring for if the battery temperature increases too high and becomes a danger, or if the temperature gets too low and becomes an issue. So it constantly monitors the temperature of the battery and records that information in the Knowledge C database.
Did you look into the battery temperatures from before midnight and after midnight and do an analysis regarding the temperatures of that cell phone battery?
I did, yes. Throughout the evening of the 28th of January and then the morning of the 29th.
Mr. Whiffen, that's going to be hard to read. Is there any way you can enlarge it?
Apparently not like that. There we go.
Thank you.
So on the evening of the 28th, see an average temperature of around mid 80 degree Fahrenheit. I've got no understanding of where the device was at this time, whether it was in a pocket on a surface, whether it was in use or not. But I just wanted to get an average idea of temperatures of the device. By 13 minutes after midnight, we're still at 82 Fahrenheit. At 22 minutes after midnight, we know from the location data that the device was currently in a car, and we see the temperature has dropped to 77 Fahrenheit. By 37 minutes after midnight, we now know the device is already at Fairview. It's been at Fairview for approximately 12 minutes, and the temperature has continued to drop. It's now 72 Fahrenheit.
Mr. Whiffen, if I can interrupt you. At 12:37, when the temperature drops to 72 degrees, is that before or after the healthcare data stops for that evening?
That's after.
Thank you.
45 minutes past, the temperature's dropped to 66 Fahrenheit. 53 minutes past, it's dropped to 61 Fahrenheit. 7 minutes after 1, it's dropped to 55 Fahrenheit. At 1:36, it's dropped to 50. And then we have a large gap in the data, with the next record being made at 6 minutes after 6 a.m., when the temperature is 43 Fahrenheit.
Mr. Whiffen, if a phone has any protection or coverage, well, let me ask it this way. Do you know what, if anything, happened around 6:02? 6:03 to trigger that 6 degree drop in temperature?
I don't know. Accurately, no.
Okay. And then you're now at 6:14 and it's 37 degrees?
Yeah, correct. This is the coldest temperature recorded.
Do you know what, if anything, happened to that phone at 6:15:01?
I don't know.
Okay. Please continue.
And then as of that point in time, from 6:35, we start to see an increase in temperature to 43 Fahrenheit. At 6:40, it's up to 50 Fahrenheit. At 6:48, up to 55 Fahrenheit. And at 6:56, up to 61 Fahrenheit. And then also plotted this out onto a graph just for visualization. Again, we can see on the evening of the 28th, the temperature is relatively consistent. It starts to drop as we know the phone is traveling in a car, and by the time it arrives at Fairview, we only see it drop until 1:36 a.m. We see a relatively modest drop over the next few hours, but no records recorded. We see the final drop at 6:14, and then we see an increase, but there are no increases occur prior to 6:14 that would suggest that the phone went from a cold environment to a warm environment or had extensive usage.
Between 1:36 a.m. and 6:06 a.m., is there any indication at any time that that battery temperature went up?
No, there's no records related to battery temperature at all for that time.
Thank you. Is there another area that you looked at for your conclusions in this case?
Yes, I was looking at device usage.
What is device usage?
Information about when the user unlocks the phone, what applications they're using, what they're using the device for, and when they lock the phone again.
Would device usage require an actual person to interact with the phone, or can it happen without user interaction?
Everything that I was looking at was related to physical interaction and manipulation of the device by a user.
Please continue.
So the three sources of data that I used for this were KnowledgeC, a database I mentioned earlier that logs lots of different activity, including device unlocks, device locks, applications that are on screen. The current power log, which I mentioned, which can track button presses. So specifically when the lock button is pressed and the times that I display have been offset appropriately. And unified logs, which is essentially a list of almost everything that's happening on that phone for a short amount of time. but it would be used, for example, if you had a problem with your device, took it back to Apple because it was crashing all the time, let's say, they could look at the unified logs and figure out, well, what's causing these crashes to occur. So really granular. We see that at 12 minutes and 52 seconds after midnight, the device is unlocked using biometric face ID. The SMS application is on screen for about 5 seconds before it's closed, and then the user presses the lock button at the side of the device to lock the phone. At 13 minutes and 54 seconds, biometric face ID is used again, and the SMS application is opened. And at 14 minutes and 29 seconds, the lock button is pressed again, causing the device to lock. 15 minutes and 46 seconds, the device is unlocked using Face ID. The SMS application is already on screen because that's the application that was on screen when the device was locked. And the device is locked again at 16:03. At 17 minutes and 59 seconds, the device is unlocked again using Face ID. The SMS application is still on screen from before. And at 18 minutes and 12 seconds, the lock button is pressed, causing the device to lock. At 18 minutes and 25 seconds, the device is unlocked using Face ID. The SMS application is already on screen from the previous usage. And at 18:31, the SMS application is closed. At 18:34, the phone application is opened by the user actively pressing on the phone icon on the home screen. At 18:36, they're now in a call, and this causes a different screen on the phone. And at 19:23, that phone call ends. At 19:29, the Waze application is opened by the user pressing on the icon on the home screen. And that's open for approximately 5 minutes, closing at 24 minutes and 26 seconds. 2 seconds later, at 24 minutes and 28 seconds, the device is locked by the user pressing the lock button on the side of the phone. At 24 minutes and 59 seconds, the device is unlocked using Face ID. The SMS application is opened using the icon on the home screen. And at 25 minutes and 9 seconds, the lock button is pressed by the user to lock the device. At 27 minutes and 45 seconds, the device is unlocked using Face ID. The SMS application is already on screen, and at 27 minutes and 50 seconds, the device is locked using the lock button. 29 minutes and 52 seconds, device is unlocked using Face ID. SMS application is already on screen from the previous usage, and at 29 minutes and 53 seconds, the lock button is pressed to lock the device. 32 minutes and 4 seconds, the device is unlocked using Face ID. SMS application is already on screen from the previous use, and at 32 minutes and 9 seconds, the lock button is pressed by the user. And that is the final interaction with the device. It's the final unlock of the device using Face ID, and it's the final logged button press on the device as well to lock the device.
So the final interaction with John O'Keefe's cell phone that night?
Correct, up until 6:15. AM.
In 12:32:09 was the last time before the phone moved again the next morning?
Correct.
Is there one more area that you engaged in analyzing to help reach your conclusions in this case?
There is. During my time looking at the unified logs that were mentioned, I found a record that appeared like it could be interesting that was called Doppler. This was the pocket state that I think I mentioned earlier, and it detects when the user takes the phone out of a pocket, or at least removes the item that's blocking the camera. There were hundreds of thousands of records within the unified logs that I was able to filter down to just the Doppler records, and to filter and aggregate down into a more digestible number, which is what's shown here. So again, whenever the device receives a phone call, or whenever the device is picked up in a particular way, the camera activates and it actively looks for a face. If it finds that the camera's blocked, it records the fact that it's in a pocket state. And it will continue to record pocket state until either the obstruction is removed, so the device has been removed from a pocket, or until whatever is calling for the Doppler check to be completed. So, for example, if I make a phone call, it will continue to check and look for a face up until the phone call ends, or the ringing ends. So in this case, at 12 minutes and 37 seconds, see a small amount of time where four Doppler checks were conducted. And that ended at 12 minutes, 37 seconds with a pocket state cleared event. At 12 minutes and 39 seconds, there was a 7.5 second period where 108 Doppler checks were conducted. Again, that ended with a pocket state cleared event at 12 minutes and 46 seconds. At 25 minutes and 8 seconds, there was a single Doppler check that resulted in a pocket state. And at 29 minutes and 37 seconds, for 5.5 seconds roughly, there were 97 Doppler checks. The 97th check resulted in a pocket state cleared event at 29 minutes and 42 seconds. At 31 minutes and 52 seconds past midnight, there was an 11-second period where 155 Doppler checks were made. The 155th Doppler check resulted in a pocket cleared event at 32 minutes and 3 seconds. At 33 minutes and 14 seconds was the start of a 5-hour and 20-minute period where 26,500 Doppler checks were conducted. Every one of those checks came back to say that it was in a pocket state. There was never a pocket state cleared event during that time. At 2 minutes after 6 a.m. And 41 seconds, there was a 12-minute period and 20 second where 417 Doppler checks were conducted. The 417th Doppler check showed a pocket state cleared event at 6:15:01.
Mr. Whiffen, as a result of your analysis of John O'Keefe's cell phone, considering the location data, including Waze data, and considering the healthcare data, the pocket state information, the battery temperature, did you have an opportunity to create a timeline putting all of these different important pieces of data together so you could show them to the jury in chronological order?
I did, yes.
Would you share with us now your timeline and explain it for us?
Of course. So again, this combines all of the information from the previous slides, just showing it all within a timelined view. So at 18 minutes and 25 seconds, the device is unlocked using Face ID. We see the SMS application is in use. For around 11 seconds, a phone call is made from John to Jennifer McCabe. Phone call lasts 36 seconds, starting at 18 minutes and 47 seconds. That call ends at 19 minutes and 23 seconds, and the mobile phone application is closed at 19 minutes and 24 seconds. At 19 minutes and 29 seconds, the Waze application is loaded on screen. And at 20 minutes and 49 seconds, which is what this location on the side relates to, we see an incoming message from Brian Higgins saying, "You coming here?" At 22 minutes and 14 seconds, this is the start of the three flight climb events as the device is driving along Oakdale Road, I believe that one is. At 24 minutes and 26 seconds is when the Waze application is closed and the device is locked via the lock button at 24 minutes and 28 seconds. At 24 minutes and 37 seconds, the three flight climb events comes to an end. And at 24 minutes and 38 seconds is the first record that shows a speed of 0 meters per second. At 24 minutes and 59 seconds, the device is unlocked using Face ID, and the message, "You coming here," is read at 25 minutes and 8 seconds after midnight. At 25 minutes and 9 seconds after midnight, the device is locked using the lock button. At 27 minutes and 33 seconds after midnight, a text message is received from Jen McCabe saying, here. At 27 minutes and 45 seconds after midnight, the device is unlocked using Face ID. And the here message that was just received is read at 27 minutes and 48 seconds. At 27 minutes and 50 seconds, the lock button is pressed by the user, causing the device to lock. At 29 minutes and 37 seconds, we start to get some Doppler checks. And at 29 minutes and 42 seconds, the pocket state cleared event is written. At 29 minutes and 44 seconds, there's an incoming call from Jen McCabe. This is answered and lasts for 7 seconds, ending at 29 minutes and 51 seconds. At 29 minutes and 52 seconds, the device is unlocked, and a second later, the lock button is pressed, causing the device to lock again. 31 minutes and 47 seconds after midnight, a message is received again from Jennifer McCabe saying, pull behind me. And at 31 minutes and 52 seconds, the Doppler check records a pocket state. At 31 minutes and 56 seconds, we start the health event that shows 36 steps were taken. And at 32 minutes and 3 seconds, there's a pocket state cleared event. At 32 minutes and 4 seconds, the device unlocks with Face ID. And again, I'll point out that makes perfect sense if the Doppler state clears because it's no longer within a pocket and then it unlocks a second later. That makes sense with the logic that's been identified. At 32 minutes and 5 seconds, messages applications on screen and the message pull behind me is read. 32 minutes and 9 seconds, the messages application is closed and the device is locked for the last time. At 32 minutes and 16 seconds, the 36-step health event is ending. At 33 minutes and 14 seconds, we have the first of the 26,500 Doppler state records that all record pocket state. This is followed by several phone calls at 33 minutes and 35 seconds, 34 minutes and 9 seconds, 34 minutes and 38 seconds, 35 minutes and 9 seconds, 35 minutes and 35 seconds, and 36 minutes and 9 seconds. All calls from Karen, call were all unanswered, and all resulted in pocket state being detected by Doppler. At 36 minutes and 9 seconds, and again at 36 minutes and 40 seconds, two more phone calls received from Karen, again showing unanswered calls and resulting in pocket state being recorded by Doppler function. 37 minutes past midnight, battery temperature has dropped to 72 Fahrenheit. And at 37 minutes and 8 seconds, a further phone call, again unanswered, again resulting in a pocket state recorded by Doppler. 37 minutes and 31 seconds, a 3-second voicemail received from Karen. And at 38 minutes and 21 seconds, another incoming call. And at 38 minutes and 26 seconds, another incoming call, both unanswered, both resulting in Doppler pocket state being detected by Doppler. And I've also shown some of the locations that were recorded at around this time by the device. 40 minutes and 31 seconds, a message received from Jennifer McCabe saying, hello, this is the first iMessage or SMS message received by the device, which is unread. This is followed up 2 minutes later, 42 minutes and 9 seconds, by another message from Jennifer McCabe saying, where are you? And at 42 minutes and 35 seconds, there's a 40-second voicemail received from Karen. 43 minutes past midnight, the battery temperature has now dropped to 66 degrees Fahrenheit. At 45 minutes and 53 seconds, another incoming message from Jennifer McCabe saying hello. And again, we can see location data at 53 minutes and 7 seconds, placing the device on the front yard somewhere, kind of around the flagpole area. 55 5 minutes and 31 seconds, a message received from Karen stating, I'm going home. 55 minutes and 50 seconds, a follow-up message saying, see you later. Another location data, this is the location that's shown bottom left. And at 2 minutes past 1 a.m., another message from Karen saying, your kids are cooking alone.
Mr. Whitford, based on your analysis of John O'Keefe's cell phone, keeping in mind some of the data points you shared with us, that Wade was initiated around 12:19, that the car reached the flagpole around 12:24:37,
that the only health data during that later time near 12:30 was from 12:31:56 to 12:32:16. That the last interaction was at 12:32:09, followed by an overnight pocket state, an increased reduction.
Objection, Your Honor.
So I need to hear the question first.
Including a increased reduction in the battery temperature. Do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty that after that phone stopped in the car at the flagpole area of 34 Fairview, whether or not that cell phone remained near the flagpole the entire night until after 6 a.m. the next morning?
Objection, Your Honor.
I'm going to allow it.
The location data that shows accurate tends to show around the flagpole area. There's no further health data other than 36 steps that were taken that suggest that it moved after 32 minutes and 16 seconds after midnight. The battery temperature data never indicates that the device went from a cold environment to a warm environment, which I would expect to see if the device went inside a building. And the Doppler state information suggests that the camera was blocked for at least the majority of the 5 hour period, with no records showing that the camera was unblocked during that time, which would typically happen if you were to pick a camera up and move it around.
Does that lead you to a conclusion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty?
Yes.
Whether that phone remained in the flagpole area from around 12, 24, 33.
So
until the next morning at 6 a.m. or after.
That's
the
my
objections
opinion.
Sustained. Ask the question in a different form.
Do you have an opinion where John O'Keefe's cell phone was from around 12:24:33 on the evening of January 29, 2022 through at least 6 a.m. and after that morning?
Yes. Based on the totality of all of the information that we've described, my opinion is that the device never moved far away from the flagpole.
I have no further questions. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Lessie?
Can you reapproach, Your Honor, please?
Okay. Jurors, feel free to stand up.
Your Honor, if I may have a moment, please, to set up at the podium.
Okay. Mr. Whiffen, I should have told you, you can feel free to stand up and stretch if you
Thank
want
you.
To as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. May I proceed with the administrative matters? May I approach?
Yes.
Thank you. Your Honor, pursuant to a stipulation with the prosecution, I would like to mark and enter into evidence three documents. These are each portions of a March 2025 report prepared by Mr. Whiffen. The first one.
So, yes, they can come into evidence. Right. They can come into evidence. There's a stipulation. So and we can mark it as the next exhibit.
If we could, that's page 29 for the next exhibit.
You want them marked separately?
Separately, please.
Is it 40?
The next exhibit will be pages 77 and 78 of the same report.
Okay.
Exhibit 41.
The third and last is page 43 and page 44.
Okay, all set.
Thank you, Your Honor. May I, Your Honor?
Yes, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Whiffen. I don't believe we've had the pleasure of meeting.
Good afternoon.
Cell phone data, when correct and when correctly analyzed, can help tell a story of what may have happened under various circumstances, correct?
Correct.
And in cases like this, literally seconds on cell phone data can be significant, correct?
Correct.
What I'd like to do is to go back to your PowerPoint presentation and specifically go to the timeline that you had gone through with Mr. Brennan, and rather than repeating everything, there'll be select aspects of the timeline I'm going to reference, and with the court's permission, we will put the timeline back on that's already in evidence.
Okay.
Thank you. So what I'd like to do is to start with page 70, which we have is 78 of the deck. If you could, Mr. Wolk, go to that. And what I'd like to do, if I could please, Mr. Whiffen, is draw your attention to the very last entry, which says at the bottom, location 122438. And it indicates description, first location record showing speed of zero. Yeah. Do you see that, sir?
I do.
And this is the arrival of John O'Keefe's phone at 34 Fairview, correct?
Correct.
We could go to the next page, please. We have up at the top, 12:24:59, about 21 seconds later after arrival, we have device unlock with face ID, correct?
Correct.
Is it possible for anyone other than John to unlock that device with face ID?
If a secondary user was set up.
Do you have any indication that a second user was set up on John's mobile phone?
I never looked at that.
I'm sorry.
I never looked to see if a secondary user was set up.
In terms of the next entry, 12:25:08, it says, read message, you coming here? With three question marks. What I'd like to do, because you did not note who that was from, but I want to go back a few slides so we can identify who that message was from. We could go back to 76, please, Mr. Wolf.
Yes.
So in the last line there, message reading left to right 12-20-49, it says message received from someone listed in context as Brian Higgins. Do you see that?
Correct.
So if we could go back to slide 80, excuse me, if we could go back to slide 79, that phone reading the message, you coming here is reading the message from Brian Higgins, correct?
Correct.
But you didn't note that in the timeline that was from Brian Higgins, correct?
No, I was just highlighting the fact that a message was read and that the contents of the message were you coming here.
But you didn't note in this entry when it was read by John that message was from Brian Higgins, correct?
Correct.
Now, the next entry, lock, again, I'm always going to be reading left to right unless otherwise indicated, sir, is a time of 12:25:09, and it says device locked with lock button.
Yes.
You see that, sir?
I do.
That requires human volitional conduct. In other words, someone has to actually manipulate their phone and hit it, right?
Correct.
Now, at this particular point, isn't it correct that in your report that you mentioned in your direct, your March 2025 report, that you had more of a description of what was happening at this time with the phone, namely device bearing shifts to a westerly direction as location records also show the device moving west from the roadside towards the house. Isn't that what you had in your report?
Yes, and that's covered in the location section of this report, the right. PowerPoint.
So there is no statement in this timeline under any type where you had concluded that at this time the record showed that the device was moving west from the roadside towards the house, correct?
The location latitude longitude was moving westerly, but at the same time the accuracy was increasing, so it didn't intrinsically prove that the device was moving.
My question, Mr. Wiffen, is straightforward. Okay. In this sense that I'm just looking for an answer of whether on this timeline you included the analysis that you had in your report that the device at this time was moving west from the roadside towards the house. Did you include it in that timeline?
No, I left that out of the timeline.
Next entry, 27:33. And that's 12:27:33. You note that there's a message received from Jen McCabe. Here, exclamation point, question mark. You see that, sir?
Correct.
Now, at this point, you have two people in just 2.5 minutes. Brian Higgins and Jen McCabe trying to find out if the John is coming to 34 Fairview. Is that a fair conclusion?
It appears so.
I'll allow it.
Is that a fair conclusion?
It would appear so, yes.
So just because of the colloquy that occurred, I want to repeat the question. Now you have, at this point, at 12:27:33, you have two people, Brian Higgins and Jennifer McCabe, in just 2.5 minutes trying to find out if John or the phone is coming to 34 Fairview.
Objection.
Sustained. Ask it differently, Mr. Lesser.
Thank you, Your Honor. Now, at this point, you have two people trying to find out if John is coming to 34 Fairview, correct?
Objection.
Sustained.
Mr. Whiffen, in terms of the information at this stage, there are two communications with Mr. O'Keefe on this phone, and that is, they're trying to find out, I'll rephrase it. There are two communications, one from Jennifer McCabe and one from Brian Higgins, correct?
Correct.
Now let's go to the next deck 80, please, Mr. Wolt. This is 12:27:45, device unlock with face ID, correct?
Correct.
And then right under that is 12:27:48. It says read message, which it says here, and is it correct that that is the message that was sent by Jennifer McCabe?
Correct. I'd just like to point out it says read message, not read message.
Read message, thank yes. you. And that, the fact that Jen McCabe sent that message and that it was read was not indicated in your timeline at this point, correct?
Sorry, repeat that question.
Yes, you did not, it does not appear in that timeline that you've drafted that that message that was read was from Jennifer McCabe, is
correct.
It?
Correct.
Next entry, 2750, device locked with lock button. Next entry down that, 2937, Doppler pocket state. And I want to be clear. Does Doppler pocket state mean that someone takes an iPhone? Because up above there's read messages we went through on 2748. So if somebody reads the message and then it goes at 2937 into Doppler pocket state, does that mean someone has, for example, put it in their pocket?
No.
What does it mean that it's a pocket state?
So the only times that I was able to cause a pocket state to be recorded is when the camera was blocked and when the device received a phone call or was picked up in a particular way so that the device thinks that you're about to try to use it. If the camera is not blocked from the outset, then nothing's recorded at all. And in order to get the pocket state cleared, the camera must be blocked to begin with. So again, you have to receive a phone call with it in your pocket and remove it in order to get a pocket state cleared.
Thank you, because that helped me, because that's exactly where I was going with the next question, which is pocket state cleared. What did you conclude from 2937 to 2942 that there was in pocket state and then pocket state cleared?
There was some activity on the device that caused the pocket state to be checked. The device was in a pocket state up until 2942, whatever was obstructing the camera was removed.
Next entry is a call at 12:29:44. And that, you state, is an incoming call from Jen McCabe, so there you do indicate the name. And you say answered 7 seconds, correct?
Correct.
Is the phone at this time that there's an incoming call from Jen McCabe that is answered out in front of 34 Fairview?
Yes, it would be according to the location data.
Right. So now we have at 12:29:44, the phone's out in front of 34 Fairview. There's an incoming call from Jen McCabe. It's answered. 7 seconds is how long the duration of the call was. Is that correct?
Correct.
And then 12:29:51, incoming call ends, and that's that end of that second 7 second duration.
Correct.
So you've concluded that this was a call that was indeed answered by the user of the phone, correct?
Correct.
Now let's go to Mr. Wolk 81, which is starting up at the top of 1231-47. There is, as you indicate, an iMessage received from someone with a contact named Jen McCabe. You see that, sir?
I do.
Can you just state for the jury what an iMessage is?
An iMessage is essentially a text message sent primarily from iPhone to iPhone via the Apple servers, not like an SMS message which goes through carriers.
And is it correct that the message that was received from Jen McCabe said, from a contact of Jen McCabe, says, pull behind me?
Correct.
And then at 1231.52, we're back to Doppler pocket state, correct?
Correct.
Now let's go to the next entry, which is deck 82. It's under health type. And what I want to do is see if we can clarify. The Commonwealth on direct examination and multiple times referred to this as healthcare data. Do you remember hearing that healthcare data term?
I do.
Is that a correct term? Is it healthcare data or is it health data?
It's health data.
So it's incorrect to refer to this as healthcare data, correct?
Healthcare data is encompassed within Apple Health, but primarily if we're talking about steps being taken, it would just be health data.
Right. So the correct parlance is health data,
yes.
Correct? Particularly when we're getting to steps, is that correct?
Correct.
It's important to be precise about the parlance.
Yes.
So in this entry, 1231.56, you state that there's the start of health event, quote, 36 steps/25 meters, correct?
Correct.
Is it accurate to say that because we're in the United States and we don't work on the metric system, that 25 meters is about 84 feet? Are you able to make that calculation?
It's approximately that, yeah.
Right. Would you accept approximately 84 feet? So as we discuss meters, we can go to feet and
yes.
About 84
I would accept
feet.
Approximately 3 times 25.
Right. So, in your report of March 2025, isn't it correct that for this time, you stated that the device began moving for a period of 20 seconds, correct?
Yes.
So, again, your conclusion from your analysis is with these 36 steps, the device at this point began moving. Correct?
Yes, correct.
Next entry, 1232.03. Pocket state cleared, correct?
Correct.
So does that mean that there's some human activity going on, interaction with the phone, or not?
It could have been a received phone call. It could have been movement of the phone to be lifted.
But something has happened.
But something's happened, yeah.
Next, 1232.04, device unlocked with Face ID, correct?
Correct.
And then at 1232.05, it states application focus messages.
Yes.
Can you clarify what that means in terms of what is happening with the phone for the jury?
Yep. So at 32 minutes and 5 seconds, the messages application was in focus on screen. So it was the application that was being used by the user at that time.
Now, the next entry is message 1232.06, and it states read message, quote, pull behind me, close quote, correct?
Correct.
Now, you don't indicate who that message is from in your timeline, but that's the message that was sent by Jennifer McCabe at 1231.47, correct?
Correct.
Next entry is application lock at 1232.09, and you've got here end application focus, and then you state device lock with lock button for the last time, correct?
Correct.
So that's again pressing the side button on the iPhone that locks it.
Correct.
And that requires human conduct, human interaction with the phone, correct?
Correct.
And then the next entry under health data at 12:32:16, that is 7 seconds after, 7 seconds after the lock, it's the end of the health event of 36 steps, 25 meters, and as we agreed, approximately 84 feet, correct?
Correct.
So, in terms of the steps, I want to turn to some further information with regard to your previous, the report that you mentioned on direct, which is the March 2025 report. Your Honor indicated a time for the break, and I'm going to go into a little bit of different area. Would you like me to keep continuing?
All right, Mr. Lessie. Folks, we'll stop. Turn on the lights, please. Thank you. Mr. Lincoln, I need you back here in the morning. Jurors, we're going to recess for the day. Please do not discuss this case with anyone. Don't do any independent research or investigation into the case. If you happen to see, hear, or read anything about the case, please disregard it and let us know, and please be very careful with your social media needs, all right? We'll see you tomorrow morning.
The President, jury, right this way, please leave your notebooks on the chair.
I'll see counsel at sidebar.
You are unmuted.
Thank you.
We're back in session. You may be seated.
Why, Margaret?
For the record, before the court is Commonwealth versus Karen Reed, 22 CR 117. The parties are present. The jury is not present.
All right. Thank you. All right. So we know that the Commonwealth has filed a few anyway, or repeated motions trying to get the defense to comply with reciprocal discovery regarding the ARCA witnesses. Previously, about a month or so ago, maybe longer, I found that there was a violation of the defendant's obligations for reciprocal discovery, and I found that it was deliberate. The Commonwealth filed additional motion, a motion to compel reciprocal discovery of the ARCA witnesses or to exclude their testimonies. I issued an order last week for certain discovery to be provided and to be provided by ARCA. On the day of opening statements, it was clear to me that there was another violation of the defendant's rules, defendant's obligations under our rules of criminal procedure. And based on that, especially given what has the defense has failed to deliver, I would not permit the defense from mentioning ARCA in their opening. So today we're going to have an evidentiary hearing on your motion, Mr. Brennan. So I expect that we will get through both witnesses by the end of today. If not, we'll have to have them back. But I expect we can get through them. So Mr. Brennan, who are we going with first? Dr. Wolf?
Please.
Okay.
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.